Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, we have had a gigantic week. I tell you, some of the stuff that's happening, and I'm putting myself in a position to change the way I do business here in the city of Benton Harbor. I have had several adventures this week that I'm going to elaborate on, talk about just a little bit so people can understand how serious this stuff is. And I tell you, this is something that I believe is crucial for the future of our children. You know, anytime you beg another man to set you free, you would never, ever, ever, ever be free. Freedom is something that you have to do for yourself. You have to be able to take it. And that's why we're in this position today. We're in this position today because right now we can't take it. Because we don't know who is on our side. Black folks, white folks, we don't know that. Black people want to be like white folks, you see. They want to treat you like white folks treat you. That's how black folks want to treat you. That's their history. That helps their ego, you see. You know, as a people who have been traumatized, you know, for over 450 years, we have suffered abuse, mistreatment, torture, hanging, raping. We have had it all. But I'm here to tell you today that we can win this war. We can win this battle because we're at war. This is no conflict. We are at war, you see. And we're not fighting back. We're fighting each other. You see, I will never understand why we do what we do until we sit down and talk about it. Maybe there's a reason black folks kiss up to white folks. Maybe there's a reason. I don't know. But, you know, after, you know, more than 35 million of us were killed, maybe that should have taught us something. There's nothing at all. But let me tell you this quick story. One of my friends from St. Louis was at the, in East St. Louis. He's from St. Louis, but he went to East St. Louis. And he was there with a guy from Benton Harbor. Him and his wife, and they was together. You know, they came down to meet each other. They was in the army together. I don't know the whole story, but it just so happened while he was in St. Louis, East St. Louis, with this guy, I called him, you know, just to chat. You know, I didn't know that he was going to be with someone from Benton Harbor or something like that. And I was talking to him. You know, we would laugh because when I talk to my friends, I laugh and joke and I say stuff, you know, I just cheer him up and stuff like that. And I was just talking to him, telling him some of the things that, you know, I had done the week before and that we now have a total of 28 guys that's been released. And I'm expecting two more to be released in 2023, and they have served a total of 89 years together, and I'm expecting them to be released. It hasn't been finalized, but I'm expecting them to be released in 2023. But anyway, let me get to this story. When he got off the phone with me, the doctor told him, he said, Reverend Pinckney is one of the greatest heroes he had ever known. He said, I never know a man who do so much with so little. And for reason, just out of the sky blue, this guy said, oh, I don't mess with him. Me and my wife don't have nothing to do with him. He ain't no good. The doctor couldn't believe what he was listening. He said, what are you saying? He said, there is nobody good. He had put his life on the line for you people. And this is how you treat him? You tell me? I know this man. I know what he have done. You know, he said, what have you done? So he realized he had offended the doctor. And the doctor said, well, tell me something you have done to help the people in Benham. Name one thing. He couldn't name nothing. He said, then he started rolling up all the things that I have done and all the sacrifices I have made. And he went on and on and on. And then he told the guy, he said, have you ever talked to Brother Pinckney before? The guy said, no. He asked his wife, have you ever talked to him? He said, no. He said, what is wrong with y'all? He said, he took his wife by the hand and left them right there in St. Louis. Now, they came down there to visit them. And they were going to spend, the week or weekend or whatever it was with them. But he told them, I don't want to have nothing ever to do with you ever again. He said, I told them this. I said, you people in Benton Harbor, you are the reason why the world is like it is today. He said, what is wrong with y'all? He said, that man has not done anything to you or anybody you know. Yet still, you come right up in my face and tell me that you don't want to. He said, man, get on out of here, man. He said, Reverend was right about you people. And I am. I don't want nobody in Benton Harbor to be my friend. I don't trust them. They're not worth nothing. They're lie. They're cheat. They're steal against you. They don't know how to be friends. They don't know how to be friends. You see, and if you see, they would do anything. And if they can find a way to send you to jail, they will. These are the people in Benton Harbor. This is what they do. You see, and they think they be doing something. I'm helping the man, the white man. This is the mentality that we deal with here. This is the mentality that we deal with. I mean, it's unusual, but this is what we do. And this is why I have made a commitment that this year I'm not accepting calls from the mother, the father, none of these. I'm not spending no time helping them because they're not worth it. They're not worth it. You see, long as you helping them, they love you. As soon as you cannot help them or say you're busy, even if you can't lend them $50, $60 or whatever it is, then you become a terrible person. That's what I want to be to you guys. I want to be a terrible person, y'all. I want y'all to go around and talk about how much you hate me. I love it. That's one less call I'm going to have to receive. That's right. I get calls all day and all night. Now it stops since they know that I'm not buying the bull that y'all be putting up with, y'all be dealing with. I'm not buying it. I'm not allowing you guys to do what y'all been doing, which is so, so incredible. You see, black folks, now, we got to change. And I want to go back to my women, my young ladies. I want to go back to say that you as a woman, you might be a good woman. Don't get me wrong. You might be a good woman. But you cannot raise a young man to be a man. You can't do it. There's no, if, and I'm hoping my message is loud and clear. Cannot raise a young man to be a man. Because there's certain qualities. And what we're doing, we're losing that right now. We're losing that because now women, you know, have think that they don't need a man. Didn't have never to be my daddy baby. No. If a man drops his anger in you and you get pregnant, you should be thinking about even marrying that woman. And that woman should be thinking. I know sometimes women trick you into doing stuff, and I know men, they just want some or whatever it is. But look, we got to change. We got to think about the future. We got to build that foundation. You see, they got us thinking that we don't need each other, and we do. Anytime there's children involved, we got to make sure that those children are taken care of. And I know even some of you women got good jobs, some of you men got good jobs, and y'all have children. Think about sleeping with that man, or that man think about sleeping with you. If he's not a person you want to marry, or she's not a person that you want to marry, you should not be with her. That has helped destroy this race. That's one of the reasons why these guys drive around talking, they ain't got no family and all this kind of stuff, all this crazy stuff that they be saying. Most of the crazy stuff they say don't make sense, you see, because the woman is, she's too busy trying to be happy, and the man, he's out here making 10, 11 babies. Man, I got this guy. This guy, 30 years old. He got 10 children. About 7 different women. I don't like it. You see, it dilutes the power and the foundation of the black race. We have to make sure that we are building. But now on, if it's not about your children, don't call me. If it's not about your children, do not call me. You see, all them years I wasted trying to help you guys, knowing that you guys really didn't care, you see, looking for a reason to say something, you know, which I care less. But my thing is this. We're on a mission now. We got to make sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do to build a future for our children. I was fortunate this week. I was delivering this lady some water, and she's the older lady, and she knew, and she came out and she said, "Well, Dr. Tingley, you know, you're my hero, you know," and I was shocked, you know, because you don't get that from people here in Benton Harbor. You know, their minds are not developed enough to understand that, that the work is all about that, and I do it for free. Or I do it without my money, me and my wife's money. We don't do it for other people's money. We do it with our money. That's how we do this. And she said, "Well, you know what? I have never called you, and you have not came to help me." And I said, "Well, you know, that's my job. That's my call." She went on to say that her husband had a stroke, and this guy Adderberry, I ain't going to go in and say what he is. But he was her pastor. He told her to put him in a home. And she told him, "I ain't putting my husband in a home. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, as long as he's alive, he got a home. I'm going to do everything I can to take care of him." And that's the mentality. See, that's the family mentality there. You don't put your mother, your father, your children in a home for them to stay. You see, we got to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to do. No one should be out here destroying the foundation of the family. No one. I know now they got us all over the place. They're doing all kinds of things. But let me say this. I was on this radio show out of the UK this week. And the funny thing happened, the guy brought up, which I didn't think about this, or I didn't anticipate this, that he wanted to know, why is black people killing each other? And he said that. He said, every single city. I dropped the bomb on him. I told him slavery. I said, "Black, this all come from that, from slavery. Everything that you hear now is come from slavery. Black folks haven't got over it. Maybe they never will get over it. Well, you might hear something, oh, I got over it long. No, you may not hear. You may not never get over. But he was shocked to hear me say something like, he said, wow. He said, I never thought about it. I said, well, you have to think about it like that because slavery has damaged us, and they know it. What you're seeing is the fruit from slavery in the white man's act. And it's destroying us, it's taking us to a level that no black person should be on. None. There's not a reason in this world. And they continue doing the same thing over and over. I said, you know what? We got some good white folks, and we got some bad white folks. A lot of them. And I'm going to go back to the time when I was in prison, and when this real wealthy lady sent me a letter and told me, she said 67%. Now, I'm only talking about Barron County right now. 67% of the white people that live in Barron County are racist. I thought it was more like 90%. But she said 67% are racist. She said that. She said 67%. Then you have the 33%. And she said the 33% is intimidated by the 67%. And that's why you have what you have today. See, you got to be careful even getting black folks on your side because you don't know whose side that they're on. If they give them a few dollars, they're going to switch horses right in the middle of the race. That's what they're going to do. You see, they're motivated by money. Now, here's the thing. You go out, and they always know, we always voted Democrat. We always did that. You know, ever since my dad, he voted Democrat. But actually, the Republican Party was more for black folks. People don't know that until Donald Trump came along and all this other kind of stuff came along. But the Republican Party, see, what the South had was the Dixiecrats. And they was about as racist as you could get. Democrats has always been racist. And yet still, here I am, 70 years old, and I have never voted Republican in my life. Voted for Republican. And we've been catching hell ever since. They're both the same people. Anyway, let me get back to the show, and then I got to bring in my first guest. Let me say this. This guy from the UK, he was saying he wanted to hammer in on black folks killing each other the way they're doing. Now, you know, I couldn't deny that. But I had to give him a reason for it, you see. And I took it all the way back to slavery. I told him, this was so good. I'm gonna send that the whole show out. I had a little 30-minute show with him. It was good. It was good. I talked about the Black Holocaust from 1619 to 1861, and I said this. I said more than 15 million. People, Africans, were sold into slavery. I said, more than. I said, it could have been as many as 100 million. But I'm being generous today. And all I gave it to him. And I said, look, over 35 million were killed by the slave trader. Over. And once again, I told him I was being generous. He said, the Black Holocaust was the greatest Holocaust ever in the history of mankind. Ever. Ever. I said, that has messed my brothers and sisters up. It has ruined them. They don't even know which way is up. Still love these guys that live here in Benson Harbor. You know, I love them. You see, that's why I fight for them. I'm fighting for the children. I ain't fighting for them no more. I'm fighting for the children. You see, but like I was telling him, and I explained to him, And then I dropped a bomb on him. I said that. I said, as people, we've been traumatized for over 450 years. We have suffered abuse, mistreatment, torture, rape, and hanging. And nobody went to jail for hanging because they considered us property. I said, not only did they rape the women, they raped the men too. And they don't want to talk about that because that's that homosexuality that they don't want to talk about back in them days. This is what this was all about. That guy, he ain't never met nobody who talked like me, not a black person. Because he said most black people, they want to show how much education they have. I want to give him facts. I don't want to just talk off the top of my head. I told him. I said, you know, the reason this is going on here in the United States of America is slavery, and it's been the system. This system has created this mess, you see. And that's why people are doing drive-by shoots. What have a six-year-old did to you? You're going to want to shoot a little six-year-old. What have someone, a pregnant girl, has done something? What a six-, seven-, eight-year-old? Tell me. And I told him, he said, wow, here's the key, though. After I got through talking, he said, he asked me, would I come back on his show? I told him, of course I will. I just want to make sure that you can handle my conversation. Because I don't hold them up. I don't take no prisoners. Because I can't afford to feed them. I can't afford to feed them. So I'm not taking no prisoners. And, you know, if people don't like it, that's on you. I don't even care who you like. That's you. If you from Benton Harbor, I care less about you. Come on, you don't like somebody. Man, go somewhere and sit down. You know, stop drinking that contaminated water that you're drinking. Stop drinking it. You're so stupid that these folks tell you the water is good. You out there drinking, you're still drinking leaded water. Because you don't know no better. Because you believe white folks. You believe white folks. And like the lady said, 67% of all white folks that lives in this area are racist. You got a court system that if you went to court, you don't have a chance in the world. You don't. You don't have a chance in the world. And then to get 12 white folks to agree on anything is almost impossible. But down here, they'll agree on you being guilty, even with no evidence. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a system, and half of us is on their side, especially here in Benton Harbor. You got folks right here, your cousin, your uncle, your daddy, your mama, they're on their side fighting with them against you because they know you don't know no better. They know that about you. They know you don't know no better. That's right. They know you don't know. It's unfortunate, but it's reality, and we have to face reality. Well, let me say this. Before I bring in my first guest, the minister himself, Monday, no Mickey D's, no Wendy's, no Burger King, no. Tuesday, no lottery ticket, none. Tuesday, no lottery ticket. Wednesday, no Walmart. Wednesday, no Walmart. Thursday, no gas. You know, I remember when black folks owned gas stations, grocery stores. I remember all this stuff. Now black people don't own nothing. They got these athletes thinking, don't reinvest into your community because you're going to lose money. Give it to the governor. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. They got these guys thinking that on that level. Now, don't get you no 501 and do this. Don't do that because give the money to the governor rather than go to your community and improve your community. Buying groceries or keeping that dollar circulating. That is not going to happen. Black folks, listen to white folks. That's why we all messed up today. We all messed up. And then let me say Friday. I know you ladies like to go get your nails and toes and get that weed. You know, y'all, you know, you want to go to those, them Koreans and Chinese and Japanese and all these of them Indians. You want to go spend your money with them so they can take the money out of the community. But listen, Friday, do not go get your toes done. Friday, do not go get your toes done. No weed buying on that day. You know, I would suggest you don't even go in the store. But, I can't tell you what to do. We are asking you. Boycott. Black folk, we got to get better. We got to put our children first. If we don't put our children first, the next generation is going to be the same way. So listen, I'm going to send everybody that tape who I have their email to. Everybody listen to the show. I'm going to send the tape with my interview from the UK. And so you can get an idea next time you go on someone's show. All you have to do is tell the truth. On that note, I'm going to bring in my very, very good friend from Columbus, Ohio, the one and only. There's not even two of this young man. He's my friend. I love him. And I want people to understand how important it is to take a stand. On that note, let me bring in my good friend, Minister O'Shea. Minister O'Shea, talk to me. Tell me. What's going on?
God bless you, Reverend Pinckney. It's so good to be on the program again. May God continue to bless you. In the Hebrew, Yahweh, the living Elohim, continue to bless you.
There you go.
Number one, brother, what you're doing with the boycott is part of the economic rights movement. You know, no Walmart on Wednesdays, no buying on Fridays. I want you to send me on my email, I want you to send me a list of that so I can send that all over the country, really all over the world, because, you know, I represent people in Dimona, Israel, Tel Aviv, Israel, in the Philippines, in South America, all across the islands. So if you'll send me that list so I can publicize it, because I'm the founder of the economic rights movement, not civil rights, economic rights. And in order to do that, we're going to have to boycott, and we're going to have to buy in. We're going to have to start buying from certain people and boycotting other people. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., it was just his holiday the other day. He, on his last sermon that he preached, he talked about having an insurance in. Well, back in those days, black folks owned insurance companies. They just about put our insurance companies out of business now. You're talking about having a bank in. Put your money in the black banks. Well, back in those days, we had black banks. Now we maybe got one, but, you know, after they robbed the Freedmen's Bank during Reconstruction, we still had a couple of them in the 60s. SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, what they did, they put their money in the black bank. And he told them to do that. So Dr. King was already doing the economic stuff before they assassinated him and murdered him. And what we have to understand, and people don't understand this too, that the person that shot Dr. King through the neck, he might have lived, but when they took him to St. Joseph Hospital, according to all the reports, they took the catheters out of him, took the pillow off under his head, cleared their lungs and spit on him, and put a pillow over his face and suffocated him to make sure he died. Now, that's a report that's been out for a while, but we have to understand that They wouldn't let nobody go back in the emergency room with him. If you get injured, Reverend Pinckney, or something happened to you, make sure you have a couple of your people going to the emergency room with you. Don't let them operate on you by themselves. So, because we know Dr. King, he might have died from the bullet wound in his neck. He might not have. But by the time they finish smothering him in the emergency room, you know, the black woman and the nurses that told on him, we know that's what really really finished him off. So that report, I've sent that report out on Instagram and other social media, and it's been around for a while, since the 1990s, but we're still talking about that. So what you're doing is part of the economic rights movement that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. started a while ago. Now, we just elected here in Columbus, Ohio, Dr. King's first cousin, Joel L. King Jr., to be the president of the Baptist Ministerial Alliance of Columbus, Ohio and vicinity. Joel L. King Jr., he was 16 when his first cousin, Martin Luther King Jr., got assassinated. So he was 16, I was 14. But Joel King's father was the youngest King boy, and Martin Luther King's father was the oldest King boy. So Joel was 16 when his first cousin, Martin, got assassinated. We've just made him the president of the Baptist Ministerial Alliance. All of the politicians had to come out when we installed him, and they installed me as the chaplain and as the benevolent secretary also of the Baptist Ministerial Alliance of Columbus. We had the mayor came out and spoke. The county sheriff came out. All the judges came out. And the prosecutor came out. The assistant prosecutor came out. Now, the reason they all came for the installation of Reverend Joel King is because we have something called the Civic Betterment Committee. And a Civic Betterment Committee is made up of the Baptist Ministerial Alliance members. We are not, I repeat, we are not 501c3 or 501c4. So we can endorse candidates and support any candidates that we want. The Baptist Pastors Conference is made up of pastors that actually pastors the churches. They're a nonprofit. They're 501c3. So they can't endorse anybody. So we didn't fall into that trick bag. People try to get us to be 501c3. We said, no. So we make every candidate come and sit on the hot seat at Family Baptist Church, and we make them squirm. We ask them all kind of questions. What they're going to do for the community, what they're going to do this, or do they have an open door policy, how much funds they're going to get a community, this and that. So we make them squirm. And so all of them came out to the Baptist Ministerial Alliance installment on Monday last week because they know that they've got to come and sit before us. And me, yes, I was a convicted felon in the state of Michigan on a false charge, just like you were, Reverend Pinckney. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They got to come and sit before this ex-felon. They got to come and sit before me in order to get elected. Now, that's the power. When Jesus was resurrected, he said, I got all power. He rose with all power in his hands. Well, if he's our big brother and our Savior, and he got all power, it seems like we should have some power, shouldn't we?
Absolutely.
So we got some power, and we're using it, just like you got some power, and you're using it with your economic rights movement boycotts up there. You got economic rights going on. You know how to hit them. Hit them in the pocketbook, you know, and that's where you got to hit them. So that's number one thing I want to talk about, and praise God and thank you. I want to praise God and thank you for that move right there. And if we can get the whole nation to follow you on that, follow through, then we'll get something done. You know,
absolutely.
So that's number one.
Absolutely.
Number two, you're talking about the Black Holocaust. Well, Queen Mother in Harlem, New York, Queen Mother, Dr. Deloise Blakely, is the provisional mayor of Harlem. She doesn't call it a Holocaust. She calls it a hell, H-E-L-L, a Holocaust, because that's what it was. It was a Holocaust. You know, that's what she calls it, and we've been using that term, Holocaust. Because that's what it is. We went through hell. It wasn't just a Holocaust. It was a Holocaust. And what we've been doing like you're talking about the lynchings and the killings. Will Smith put out a movie, they took it out of the theaters now, about a man they called Whip Peter. He has a name too. But Whip Peter shows how he escaped from slavery and he came back as a soldier. It was just like the movie that Denzel was and Morgan Freeman was in. Morgan Freeman said they left runaway slaves, but they came back fighting men. And like you talk, we're in a war. We've been in a war for a long time. We just ain't started being in a war. We've been in a war for a long time.
Yeah.
So Queen Mother talks about the Holocaust, and that affects everything that we do till this day. Generational trauma. Anytime people rape you and blow your head off and lynch you and cut your nuts off and castrate you, sometimes they cut the whole hookup off a man and rape your children. They rape not only the women and the girls, they rape the boys too and the men.
Yeah. Oh,
so
absolutely.
That was the Holocaust.
That
was a Holocaust. And down in Florida, the governor has made it a law, outlawed anybody talking about the history of slavery, which is America's original sin. DeSantos down in Florida, he just passed a law, got a law passed, where you can't have no African-American history, no history about, you can't even talk about it in school. So that's how much the racism is here in America. More than that, pull out the money in your pocket. Tell the people to pull the money out in their pocket. Look at the $1 bill, George Washington. They say the father of the country. Well, George Washington was a slave master. George Washington had slaves. He raped slave women that he owned. But they still got his picture on the $1 bill talking about he's the father of the country. Well, he was a rapist. You know, they put black men in jail for raping folks all the time who ain't even done nothing. I know that firsthand. But George Washington was a sure enough rapist. He's still on the money. Look at the $2 bill, Thomas Jefferson. $2 bill, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. He was a rapist. He raped black women and girls and whoever else he wanted to and sold people as chattel slavery. He's on the $2 bill. The black man that taught him how to be Masons, John Hanson, he's at the second table. He got a curly afro. They don't publish too many $2 bills nowadays. Look at the back of a $2 bill. You see a black man sitting at the head table in the back. Name of John, he was the first president of the United Federation of States when it was the Federation, the Continental Congress Federation of States, before it was called the United States. John Hanson was the first president. He was a black man. He was a Moor, M-O-O-R. He was a Moor. So people don't know that. But on the front of that $2 bill was Thomas Jefferson. He owned slaves. He was a rapist. $5 bill, Abraham Lincoln, he was cool. $10 bill, Alexander Hamilton. He owned slaves. He was a rapist. They talk about this one girl, Hemings, was his girlfriend. No, she was forced to have sex with him because if she didn't, he could have sold her whole family down farther south. So $10 bill, Alexander Hamilton was a rapist, but they leave him on the money. $20 bill, Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson was a slaveholder. He had one of the biggest slave plantations in the South. Andrew Jackson was a rapist. He raped black women and probably boys and men too. But they made him president of the United States, and they still got him on the money, on the $20 bill. We tried to get Harriet Tubman on the 20, but when Trump got in, he nixed that idea and made it so we couldn't even get Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. So what you have to understand, and go to the $50 bill, Grant was cool. He was a northern general. $100 bill, Benjamin Franklin had two or three slaves. So what you have to understand is that these people with the racism, they still got these rapists on the money. Now, as long as you got it like that, you're going to have inequality because you got the rapist people on the money. $1 bill, $2 bill, $10 bill, $20 bill, $100 bill. As long as you got these rapists on the money, what does that tell you about the ideology of this country? Pure racism. And they won't take it off. Now, that deals not only with the politicians, but it also deals with the monopoly finance capitalism, which is the big corporations, the big banks, the big insurance companies. What these people have done, they have made their banknotes. It says on a banknote, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Well, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that this piece of paper is fiat? It's not real money. It's legal tender. How are you going to make something, a piece of paper that's your banknote, legal tender for all debts, public and private? Well, they don't want to talk about that, how they made the Federal Reserve Bank. You got to read a big, thick book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. If you read that, it'll tell you how they made the Federal Reserve Bank. You got to read the book by General Smedley Butler, War is a Racket, that tells you about how war is based on money and power and control. So basically, those are the things that we need to really be teaching our children so they can look at how things really go. I want to tell you real quickly before my time runs out, next couple of minutes, Brother Bob Brown, the prophet to the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church sanctioned chattel slavery. He's in Chicago, been in Chicago, organizing the student. Now, Bob Brown helped start the Black Panther Party. Bob Brown, my good friend for 50 years, he's a man of integrity. He also helped start the Congress of Racial Equality and SNCC, Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He also worked with Stokely Carmichael and helped popularize the slogan Black Power, all this in the 60s and early 70s. He works with the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. Bob Brown is organizing in Chicago trying to get one of the priests, one of the head white priests of St. Sabina Catholic Church. He's trying to get him to lead the charge in overturning 104 papal bulls that sanctioned and approved slavery against black people and against all indigenous people, Indians and everybody else. You could not have had slavery without the Roman Catholic Church. And I call him the prophet to the Catholic Church. He's trying to save the soul of the Catholic Church. He's not asking for any reparations. He's not asking for any money for himself. All he wants is for them to repudiate, rescind, and overturn those papal bulls. And he's talking to Father Flager up there, white man, who's done a lot in the black community over the years, trying to get him to lead the charge against to do that. So whether he's successful or not, I don't know, but the Catholic Church is going to have to stand in the judgment and answer for all that they've done as the false prophets, the false prophet with all the big bishops and the Church of England, all the rest of them, that gave religious authority for the armies to take people and kidnap them and then make them slaves. Because these were kidnapped people. These people were doctors. They were lawyers. They were nurses. They were mothers. They were dietitians. They were farmers. They were teachers. They weren't no slaves in the motherland and Mother Africa. Call it Mother Eden, like the Garden of Eden. These people were people. And they took and kidnapped them in the middle of the night and put them on ships and brought them over here and enslaved them. After they enslaved them for a couple generations, took our language and our traditions, our culture, our heritage, and bastardized our religion, because really we started Christianity because Jesus was a black man named Yahshua. So they took that, twisted it around, made Jesus into a white man, Michelangelo's uncle with blonde hair and blue eyes, and twisted that, and they took us over here and made us American slaves. Now, we were enslaved people for the first couple generations, but after that we became American slaves. And till this day, what they've done now with the tricks, they've made all the people modern-day economic sharecroppers or modern-day economic slaves, however you want to look at it. Even the white people. The white people got fiat money in their pocket. They're in debt with their credit cards up to their neck, mortgages. Look at all the student loans. All the student loans, all the kids up in debt, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. How are you going to pay that off with a job coming out making $10 an hour, $12 an hour, $15 an hour? So you can't even declare bankruptcy. So basically, what these rich corporations have done, they've made us all modern-day economic slaves, modern-day economic sharecroppers. You know, we owe our Tennessee Ernie Ford said, tell St. Peter I can't go because I owe my soul to the company stove. You know, I load 15 tons of coal. And what do I get? Another day older and a deeper in debt. Tell St. Peter I can't go because I owe my soul to the company stove. Well, that's the way it is today with all the people. So we got to get all these white folks, well-meaning white folks, to understand, hey, look, the big banks, the big insurance companies, these big multinational 2,000 corporations that own all the stuff that you're talking about boycotting every week, y'all need to be boycotting with us because guess what? Y'all modern-day slaves too.
Mm-hmm.
So once they understand that, we can get something done. So I'm going to give a seminar hopefully in May, at the inclusive national inclusive program at Ohio State University where I graduated as an undergraduate and got a graduate degree. I'm going to try to give a seminar there to the young kids, black, white, red, yellow, all of them. They want to talk about inclusivity. Well, I'm going to tell them, y'all just thinking about doing it on a college level, being inclusive on a college. I'm talking about being inclusive on a global level. We need to become global citizens. We need to be global citizens. We all need to understand that we are all from the Garden of Eden, created by God, that we're all original, indigenous, paradise people. We're all Edenites from the Garden of Eden, and that we need to be global citizens. Until we become that, we're not going to be able to disarm the world of all these nuclear weapons and hydrogen bombs and weapons of mass destruction. We're not going to be able to clean up the atmosphere and the ecology with all the pollution and burning the fossil fuels and clean up the oceans. Until we become global citizens, understand that, as Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. Until we accept that, we're not going to be able to do any of that. So I'm going to talk to young people. I've been talking to them at the different colleges here in Ohio. I'm going to talk to them about being Edenites from the Garden of Eden and being included. How are you going to get some of that power? How are you going to include yourself in the power that the 1%ers got? My wife came up with that slogan many years ago, the 1%ers. The 99% of us, the 99% of us, we don't own no big banks, no Walmarts, no Krogers, no AT&T, no U.S. Steel. We don't own none of that stuff, you know. So basically, we've got to be included in that. So that's basically what I'm about right now, Reverend Pinckney. I'm not going to take up too much of your time. I want to thank you for having me on the show.
I want to ask you a quick question. I got to ask you this. You have been to Benton Harbor, and also you have talked to several of the people here. And one of the things, my friend out of St. Louis, out of the sky blue, this guy I understand his motive more than anything else. He don't know me. He never spoke to me. His wife never talked to me. None of these folks ever talked to me. But yet he's telling somebody he don't like me. You know, and this guy been his friend with him. You know, Army brothers stick together. He said I could not. I could not continue to talk to him because what he's saying don't make any sense. And I said, well, you got 99% of the people living in Benton Harbor don't make no sense. That's why I'm taking a different approach now. I'm dealing with just our children. I'm not dealing with all these idiots, all these people who got something to say about everything. I'm not doing that anymore. And
you know what Jesus said. You know what Jesus said. Jesus said you can't put new wine in the old bottles. You can't put new wine in the old skins. So you're doing the right thing. I'm doing the same thing. I'm talking to the young people, the college students, the high school students, because these old heads, you know, try to put the new wine into them, they'll bust open, and they'll hate you for it. They hate you for telling the truth, like the Santos down in Florida. They hate you for telling the truth, Reverend Pinckney. So you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing.
So, you know, I'm doing something entirely new this year. I'm staying away from these people, and you know one thing I have noticed since I'm doing this, my phone is not jumping off the hook, and these people not, you know, and I like that. I don't want these people calling me no more. You're not part of the revolution. All you want something for yourself. You don't really care about your children. You don't care about none of that stuff. All you care what I can do for you right now, you see?
Right, that's right, that's right. They don't care about the children. They're not looking. They looking to line their pockets.
Yeah, yeah. So I made a commitment this year that I'm not even dealing with. I'm not chasing after trying to help these people, feeling sorry for these people. I'm not doing that no more. If it don't, is
well, look what the Bible teaches us. The Bible says seek ye first. The Bible says seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all things will be added unto you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, Yahweh, the Most High. You know, but what these people have been doing, these people have been seeking first their own money. They like crabs in the barrel. They like the crabs. Somebody else start getting up, they try to pull them down. They're not trying to help nobody. You know, my theme song I play on my trumpet, you heard me play it before. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or a song, if I can show somebody's traveling wrong, then my living shall not be in vain. So that's what I'm about.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're about. And we've got we can't put this new wine that the Holy Spirit, old folks said the Holy Ghost. We can't put this new Holy Ghost wine. We can't put this economic rights movement wine into them old skins, because they can't handle it, Reverend. They just can't handle it.
No. They sure can't. You said the magic word. Look, hey, man, appreciate you. Let's talk soon, and let's take this thing to a whole different level. I'm going to send you that the audio of my interview I had in from the U.K. And I thought it was so hilarious, because looked like, you know, he wanted to trap me. What's all the killing the black folks is doing in the community?
Yeah.
And I hit him right upside the head. Slavery. And you know, and you guys got it in the UK too, because you ain't fooling nobody. And
that's right. That's right. And be sure to send me the economic rights movement boycott list.
I'm gonna send it to you.
Okay, brother. I love you, Reverend Pinkney. I love you. May the Most High bless
you. And take care of yourself.
We'll talk later.
All right. That's good. Let me bring in my good friend Dr. Tan. I got my good friend Belinda Parker Brown on the line. But Dr. Tan got some hot information that I want to hear. And I got to hear this right away, because I can't wait for tomorrow. Talk to me, Dr. Tan, the one and only.
Thank you, Dr. Honorable Reverend Pinkney. What I had to do is that the research showed that looking up FBI informants, we wind up finding out that the people that we were looking up to as being, we'll just do it like this. Malcolm X told us, anytime you see a Negro or black person being praised by them, then you know there's something wrong with them. So everybody was talking about John Lewis, Crocodile Lewis, but these guys don't have no love. They posted that he was one of the top FBI agents was John Lewis, who was part of the Civil Rights Movement. So we now know that Jesse Jackson was involved, John Lewis was involved. And what's important about John Lewis, he was part of that Black Six. And that's the same Black Six that turned against Martin Luther King, with Martin Luther King from being a civil rights leader to a human rights leader after the Civil Rights Bill had passed. And that's when those guys were telling him that he was Martin and not Malcolm. And, you know, we have to call these guys out. We have to call out Roy Wilkins, Whitney Young Jr., James Foreman, A. Philip Randolph, James Farmer, and John Lewis, because they turned against him, and he wasn't allowed to preach at any black churches except for the Shrine of Black Madonna down in Detroit. So our people, black people, did not love Martin Luther King the last 2 years of his life, for the most part.
No.
They only loved him after he was dead. So we know from Dick Gregory that Martin Luther King was scheduled to be in the basement of a hotel apartment, and Jesse Jackson changed his room up to be on the balcony. And then we know also from Dick Gregory that one of the gentlemen, another part of the group, was the one who was assigned to make sure that Martin Luther King was on the balcony in the right spot for the snipers. You know, that came out. So we know that William O'Neill, who set up the murder of Fred Hampton, you know, Gene Roberts, who set up for Malcolm X. So, and there's also a light-skinned lady who couldn't stand Martin Luther King, who also worked for the FBI. I remember there was a black lady who actually stabbed Dr. King in the chest with a knife. You see, our black people are so injured with this post-traumatic slave disorder that we hate ourselves, that we don't support ourselves, that we don't love ourselves. So anytime you look at a people, anytime you look at government officials, anytime you look at city officials, state officials, federal officials, or anyone who calls themselves a black leader, are they unapologetically black? Are they unapologetically African? And are they unshamefully pro-black? And if they can't match up with all three of those, then you know they're working for the enemy. They're working for the FBI. The FBI was the Federal Bureau of Investigations, and then under the Civil Rights, Human Rights Movement, it became Find Blacks and Incarcerate when they used blacks. And then it was John F. Kennedy, not George Bush, even though he reactivated the program, but John F. Kennedy started the FBI initiative called Faith-Based Initiative, Faith-Based Initiative, where the government paid pastors of monies in church or donated money to the churches to get their influence. And so most of your pastors now, you know, all of them received money during COVID. All of them became co-conspirators as part of the FBI during COVID. And that's why now you need to look, everybody on this phone need to look, every pastor need to look, to see that they're prosecuting Fauci. They're prosecuting Anthony Fauci. There's a deposition out, where a seven-hour deposition of Anthony Fauci. So what everybody was talking about, breaking up families, deciding to take the jab, not the jab, like that's silly. That they're still jabbing us with bullets. They're still jabbing us with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, Trayvon Martin. They're still killing us. How are you going to love people who are still killing you? And then they want to blame you for your circumstances. So
right.
That's what's going on. So we have our own people who are working for the FBI. And so when gentrification is kicking in, we have to figure out that there were probably some black political leaders who sold Harlem to the whites, who are selling Benton Harbor to the whites, who've sold Chicago to the whites, who sold Flint to the whites. You know, so this is what we are looking at. And they're bringing in other groups to displace us. They're setting the white-skinned Hispanic above the brown-skinned Hispanic, and they're all geared to try to displace us. So we can't try to be supporting people of color or brown skin. No, we got to love the black skin we in, and no, they're trying to do us in. We now know what the Spanish people were saying in California school board, and we know how they've been treating us, so we have to call that out. We know how the Arabs been treating us, the Indians been treating us. And then we are guilty of how we treat us. So we have to stop being our own FBIs in our communities, and we have to now start defending ourselves, loving ourselves, and get that Black Panther mentality where it's all about the community, it's all about the black people, it's all about the black children, that we got to be pro-black. And it's not that we're anti-anybody else when you love yourself. So that means anybody who say that to you is stupid. So you see, that's ignorant. If somebody says, oh, if you're pro-black, does that mean you're anti-white? No, you're not that big. You're not that important. So what you're just saying to me is it doesn't make any sense. You know, so that's unintelligent. So we don't have to be tongue-tied on that issue. You tell them it doesn't make any sense. Loving yourself never means hating anybody else.
There you go. Doc, I want you to warm up for tomorrow because I know you got a lot that you want to talk about. I do want to tell you this before I hang up. I was on the show in UK. What's that guy named? P. Morgan, and he thought that I don't know what he was thinking. I was more than a match for him. And you know he's that guy. He's that one that was on Megan. He don't want to be against her. So he asked me the question: how come black people are killing each other in the United States? And I told him, slavery, and you should have heard a pendulum. I just dropped the ball, and then I went on down the history, and told him, you know, how everything started. And then I told him our history was written by those that hung our heroes. And I said, and you got the nerve to ask me that? And but look, he only gave me a half an hour. Well, I gave him a whooping for about 30 minutes, man. And he asked me to come back on, so we'll see. But I'm gonna send you the tape so you can listen. I haven't got it yet. You haven't sent it to me yet. But as soon as he sends it to me, I'm gonna send it to you so you can so you can hear some of the things that I'm saying here. So that's huge. When I told him because of slavery and how you just said that you can't, you know, they still treat black folks like slaves there too. So you know,
right?
You,
and
you
actually,
know,
they're getting worse.
Yeah, and even so, absolutely. But it was one of my best half an hour, and I'm gonna spread it around here, just so you know, because he's the type of guy. I know he's, you know, deep in his heart, he is a racist, because he's going to make it like white on white. But he met his match with me, and I'm more than happy. It was big time stuff too, because you know he's a big celebrity in the UK. So, but he got, you know, I think I gave him a butt spanking that he would never forget. But look, I'm out of time, Doc.
All right. See you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Bye bye.
Yeah, 1 o'clock, everybody. 1 o'clock tomorrow. 1 o'clock tomorrow, everybody. 1 o'clock tomorrow. Do not forget 1 o'clock. And Annette, definitely you. It's your time tomorrow, so we'll talk tomorrow, Annette. Listen, hey, tomorrow, same time, same station, but only at 1 o'clock. God bless you all.